Everyone like to call into session the April 18, 2013 session of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. We are convened. We have a goodly number of bills to work in work session this morning, and the first one that I am going to open is House Bill 2841, a work session. And like to call forward Rep. Bence, and as he's on his way up, Beth, if you could please remind us what this bill is about.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you discussed at your last meeting the House Bill 2841-2 amendments, I believe. This is the bill that would require agencies who are acting on orders or rulemaking related to recreational placer mining to consult with parties who may be affected by those orders or rulemaking.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And with that, good morning to Representative Bence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cliff Bence, District 60, appearing before you again on this bill, and I thank you for your consideration of this important modest piece of legislation. What you should have in front of you are the dash threes, and in addition, a sheet that reflects the agreement of the parties as to some clarification language that they worked on last night, and I want to compliment the DEQ for their hard work on this to get to a point of agreement. The challenge, of course, Mr. Chair, is that although they are in agreement with the dash threes, those dash threes need to be modified as reflected in the sheet that you should have before you. The proposal is that if you were to adopt the dash threes, then we would indicate to the rest of the House, should make it to its way to the floor, that these changes would have to be added in the Senate. And so, with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions about this piece of legislation.
Thank you very much. And just to be perfectly clear, Representative Bence, there is general agreement on the, I guess we refer to this as hand-engrossed version that is soon to come.
Yes, Mr. Chair, indeed, this is a reflection of the agreement of the parties, and again, I want to compliment the DEQ for working on this and getting us to this point. Without their hard work last night, we wouldn't have this morning.
Thank you very, very much. So, committee members, please understand that it has the appearance that folks have come together with an agreement, and that is waiting in the wings. And with that, is there anyone who has questions or comments for our colleague? Representative Clem.
So is the DEQ person here?
No. Mr. Chair, yes, I think so.
He's fine with it.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that's your these are your understanding of what we'll do in the Senate.
Chair, we have members of the committee, Representative Clem. Yes, we're in agreement with this language. Have had the opportunity to work with Representative Bence and his staff and the miners to get to this point. It was a bit last minute, and apologies to the committee for that, but we do have agreement.
Armour, yes. would you please identify yourself?
Oh, yes. Okay, sorry.
We know who you are.
Sorry about that. Palmer Mason, Department of Environmental Quality. Yes, and we have agreement with the understanding that it will be revised in the Senate side. So.
Anyone? Representative Krieger.
Just a comment. Palmer, over the last years, we seem like there's been constituent bases of DEQ having problems. It's been because of lack of communication. So you need to really be working that you listen to the people that you help manage and that you help provide services to. It's important to them and to us.
Yeah, it's a very fair comment, Representative Krieger. Yes.
And we very much appreciate your willingness to do that and to find agreement on the amendments. Thank you very much. Additional questions or comments? I'm seeing none. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And with that, are folks generally ready to work this bill? I'm seeing nods in the affirmative. I'm going to recognize Vice Chair McEwen, please.
Chair Witt, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendment dated April 17th, 2013.
Thank you. Vice Chair McEwen moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendment dated April 17, 2013 to House Bill 2841. Is there any discussion on her motion? Seeing none, hearing none, is there any objection? Again, none, and so ordered. Thank you very much. Again, Vice Chair McEwen, please.
Chair Witt, I move House Bill 2841 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair McEwen moves House Bill 2841 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on this motion? Representative Clem.
Mr. Chair, I, generally speaking, won't vote for anything that's going to just get fixed in the Senate unless I see exact language, which we have. Mm-hmm. This happened to me in healthcare yesterday with a promise, and I reserve the right to change my vote to no until I see exact agreed-to language by all parties. So because this exists, I'll at least vote for it, but that's not, I'm not going to vote for anything else to go to be fixed later unless it's literally been agreed to in every single word by all parties before it goes.
Thank you, Representative Clement. I think that is entirely fair. Additional questions or comments? I'm not seeing any. Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative Clement.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Hopkins.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Whitlett.
Aye.
Vice Chair Esplow.
Aye.
Vice Chair
McEwen.
Aye.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. And and I'm going to ask that Representative Bentz, would you be willing to carry this bill? Thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2841. Next, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3358. And Beth, could you give us a little bit on this bill, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3358 is the bill that would allocate funding to the Water Resources Department for purposes related to mitigation of groundwater use in the Deschutes Basin. There is a Dash 1 amendment in front of you, and I believe there are some folks here to speak to that Dash 1.
Very good. Doug Riggs, where are you? I'm not... Kimberly? If you would like to wait until Doug gets here, or if you want to start before he gets here, whatever your preference is.
I'll just go ahead.
Well, thank you.
Hopefully.
Good morning and welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Chair Witt, members of the committee, my name is Kimberly Priestley and I'm here representing Water Watch of Oregon. Water Watch opposes the Dash 1 amendments as written. However, we briefly spoke with Doug in the hall. Doug has committed to us to address our concerns if this moved out of this committee. Primarily, what we discussed was that the bill would be limited to matching funds for a Bureau study in the Deschutes Basin. This is not a study that would be limited to groundwater mitigation, but it would address the broad array of in-stream and out-of-stream needs in the basin. And the amount also would be, it would not be $2 million. It would be the $750,000 that was discussed in front of the committee at the last testimony. And also, you know, my understanding, Doug can speak to this is still just a backup to Senate Bill 839, that is the preferred route.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity. I concur with everything Kimberly has said. I think what has happened here is that it's the last minute, and Legislative Council has been very busy with Senate Bill 839, which is the preferred option. This is the backup that Representative McLean and others wanted to make sure we had, and it's also something that the Ways and Means Committee would like to have to consider as a vehicle as well. So, again, I agree that the focus of what the basin is trying to do is to be more comprehensive than just water mitigation. What the Legislative Council is trying to do is fit it within the relating clause, and I think he did a good job of that. But we certainly want to focus on a broader look. We also agree that what we're trying to do is match a Bureau of Reclamation study, so bring additional federal dollars in to help work on environmental and economic needs in the basin. And then and the amount, as Kimberly mentioned, is for the basin study is $750,000. I think the $2 million was put in to anticipate the Willamette Basin efforts as well, because this bill could be used, if 839 didn't move, it could have been used for the Willamette as well. But we certainly, what we're looking for is that $750,000 amount that we discussed at the committee. So we certainly are willing and interested in working with Kimberly to make sure that we get it right at the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you very much. And again, to be clear, the folks in Ways and Means can be the traffic cop to determine whether or not 839 is going or this bill is necessary.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, yes. I think that the preferred option is 839. That is the bill that a large group has been working on, carefully negotiated after many, many work groups. But it's a large bill with lots of moving pieces. And so from my perspective as a representative of the basin in the Deschutes, we wanted to have a fallback and an additional option for Ways and Means should it be necessary at the end of the session.
Very good. And is there general agreement that this would be an acceptable way to handle a compromise between the two bills? Is there any outstanding opposition to that type of arrangement?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't think so. I think that the acknowledgement has always been that 839 is the preferred option, but there's been a recognition of what we're trying to do is important, and with the caveat that Kimberly and I have discussed this morning.
Okay. Thank you very much. Additional questions or comments from our committee? Representative Whitsitt, please.
Since Representative McLean brought this forward, what are his feelings on this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Whitsitt, I think he has been fully briefed and agrees. He was very helpful in getting the bill drafted last fall and wants to make sure that at the end of the day, we end up with the ability to bring in the federal dollars and conduct the study that will help the basin look at overall needs over the long term. So I think he's supportive.
So he agrees with the amendment? Or doesn't agree with the amendment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Whitsitt, I haven't spoken with him directly about the amendment. I think that he would agree that the basin focus has been the right focus, and that focus is reflected in what Kimberly and I have discussed. So the language that we submitted through his office to Legislative Council was more focused. What came back from Legislative Council was a little broader. I understand why that happened, but I think we'll refocus it. And that discussion has taken place at the Central Oregon City's video teleconferences on a number of occasions. And so I'm fully confident that he would be supportive of the amendment directly. But I'm certainly happy to check with his office.
Excuse me. So he does support the draft one amendment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Whitsitt, I haven't checked with his office since the amendment came in at 5 o'clock and I was here at 8, but I'd be happy to go up and double check that just to make sure. So.
We're still, Representative Whitsitt, waiting on some paperwork on this bill. And what we could do, Beth, is there any reasonable expectation that we might get that paperwork?
Yes.
What we could do is temporarily close the work session on this and allow Doug the opportunity to go and check on that while we're waiting on the paperwork and to get back to this later in our agenda today. So,
be happy to do so.
Okay. With that, I am going to temporarily close the work session on House Bill 3358 while we wait for paperwork and the latest late-breaking communications. So, thank you very much, everyone. We'll see you back here in a little while. With that, I think I'm going to go to House Bill 2025. So, open a work session on House Bill 2025. Beth, would you please tell us about this bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2025 is the bill that deals with bison. There is a Dash 5 amendment in front of you. The Dash 5 would do much of what you discussed in committee on Tuesday. It makes a person liable to a landowner for resulting economic damages if the person permits a bison to run at large upon land, or bison for which that person is the owner or possessor running at large or uncontrolled. Notwithstanding a livestock district petition, it prohibits an owner or possessor of bison from permitting those animals to run at large. It adds bison to the definition of a stray animal. It applies to animals whose presence on land is discovered on or after the effective date of the act. It also, and this is an addition, based on the conversation on Tuesday, would specify that persons who violate the provisions of the livestock district laws commits a Class B violation. If they do so with criminal negligence, they're guilty of a Class A misdemeanor. There's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
So, Buffalo Bill is up to the Fifth Amendment here, and I'm just wondering if there is anyone who would like to address the Dash 5 amendment at this point. I'm not opening this up to a public hearing. If there is anyone that would like to discuss this for clarification purposes only, I'm not seeing anyone. Representative Clem? Anyone that you're aware of, possibly even yourself, like to address the Dash 5s, not suggesting that you need to, but only if
on 2025?
Yeah, yes, on the bison bill.
I was looking at the Dash 2s. The Dash 5s are just bison only?
Bison only.
Yeah. No, they're, they have to do with some issue in Linn County in particular that... Representative Springer once had a bill on, but I don't think does this time. I think this is her version of a bison bill, and Senator Close has a version of it. And I think we got the issues worked out that some folks had about not having an accidental liability created. And so it seems good to me, and I'm going to tell my crazy story about the bison that chased Senator Wyden and I around on the floor.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you very much, Representative Clem. Committee members, we ready to work this bill? Okay. With that, I am going to recognize Vice Chair McEwen, please.
Chair Witt, I move to adopt the Dash 5 amendment dated April 17th, 2013.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves to adopt the Dash 5 amendment dated April 17, 2013 to House Bill 2025. Is there discussion on her motion? I'm not seeing any. Is there any objection to the adoption of that amendment? Again, seeing none, hearing none, so ordered. Vice Chair McEwen, please.
Chair Witt, I move House Bill 2025 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair McEwen moves House Bill 2025 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on this motion? I'm not seeing any. Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative
Whitson.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
She wants to, but she does.
Excuse.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Vice Chairman Keeling.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Esposito.
Aye.
Chair Witt.
Aye. And would you please call the roll for Representative Unger again, please?
Representative
Unger. Aye.
Thank you very much. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. And Representative Clem, would you like to carry the Buffalo Bill to the floor?
I would, but we might ask Representative Springer if she wants to.
Okay, that's right. You would discuss that with me. We'll ask Representative Springer then to be the carrier, and we will await Representative Clem's story on the floor. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2025. Bear with me just a moment, folks. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2427, the canola bill. And Beth, can you tell us about this bill, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, on House Bill 2427, there is a -7 amendment in front of you. The -7 would replace the original bill. It does the following things. It would prohibit the raising of canola in the Willamette Valley. It prohibits the Department of Agriculture from designating any control area in the valley that allows the raising of canola. It authorizes the ODA to assess a civil penalty if that is violated. It applies to the raising of canola on or after the effective date of the Act. It would sunset the prohibition on the growing of canola in the valley on January 2, 2018. This would allow time for the College of Agricultural Sciences at Oregon State University to conduct a peer-reviewed study and report the results of that study to an interim committee no later than November 1, 2016. It terminates the growing prohibition 31 days after this legislature adjourns if the research is not funded. It also identifies the funding components. We are waiting for a fiscal impact statement, but expect to get that in the next few minutes. There's no revenue impact.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Gelser, did not to put you on the spot or to in any way infer that we have to have or need your testimony, but if you would like that opportunity, you may have it.
I'm okay. I just wanted to see it happen in the Bison
Building. All right. Back-to-back home runs here. With that, I am going to recognize Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Witt, I move to adopt the -7 amendments to House Bill 2427, dated April 17, 2013.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves to adopt the -7 amendments to House Bill 2427, dated April 17, 2013. Discussion on this motion. Representative Unger.
Thanks, Chair. Because we don't have the paperwork back, is that a problem for these amendments, or can we still move the...
It's just-in-time operation here. You're going to be flying through this door momentarily.
Okay, great.
The moment's up, Mr. Chair.
is there further discussion?
So, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Clem.
Just want to make sure I understand this. This still has a moratorium in them during the study?
Yes.
That's correct.
So I'll discuss it. I'm not supporting these amendments. We've dealt with this issue in this committee for 6 years now. The Department of Ag made a decision, and it is very dangerous territory to have the legislature overruling the Department of Ag with our views on agricultural topics when not that many people here have a good as understanding of these issues as the Department of Ag. So I really object to the concept of interfering with the Department of Ag rule. The study I like. The moratorium I don't like.
All right. Thank you, Representative Clem. Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yes. This has been an interesting display of our friends are at war and we're stuck in the middle getting the tar beat out of us. And that's exactly what we have here because we have friends on both sides of this issue. I would like to read into the record that we had done some work, Representative Thompson had done some work yesterday on getting some kind of consensus so we could move this bill, and we did get a commitment from Representative Buckley for Ways and Means, and this is the following that will be added to this in the Ways and Means process. No moratorium is established producers allowing each up to the maximum acreage planted in any one of the past 6 years. producer acreage is an addition to acres required by OSU for field studies. If full funding is not approved for the OSU study this session, the Department of Ag new policies now stands and stays in effect. Research report is due in 2016. That's the stipulations that we, I know several of us would pass this bill, but it has to have those stipulations in it when it goes to Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Esquivel, are you telling us that you have an amendment coming, or?
Well, we had discussed this, Mr. Chair, and we didn't have time to do the amendment.
Okay.
Yesterday afternoon, right. So we had agreed to talk with Peter Buckley, and this is kind of the agreement we've ended up with Peter.
Okay.
And Peter gave me his word, which to me is gold.
Okay, very good. And so if this were generally acceptable to our committee, then that would garner the support of several members of the committee.
Correct.
Okay. Is this a sheet that we would like to pass among the members?
Well, I thought, did you? No
one has that. Everybody, sorry.
I thought we did.
Everybody's okay? Anybody else would like to see this?
I would just like, I heard what you said. Could you just explain it in your own words, please?
Well, Representative Thompson, he's the one that crafted this, and I think he's done some good, thorough work on it.
The issue, and it's too late to do an amendment. We all agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
We had an opportunity yesterday to talk with Representative Buckley about what we can do in Ways and Means to take some of the rough edges off of this. And he agreed with us. I mean, it's non-binding, I understand. But he gave us his word that he would iron out some of these wrinkles in the Ways and Means process. So this does not have the weight of an amendment, obviously, because it isn't one. But the idea is to clarify some of these issues that, first of all, there'll be no moratorium on established producers, those people who have been growing canola up to the time that we put the present moratorium in, and they would be able to grow up to the volume that they did in their greatest year, in single greatest year, in the last 6 years. So essentially what that does is allows the continued growth of canola as it was during that experimental phase before the present moratorium went in. It also separates out the acres that OSU needs to do their study, and I'm not sure what that's going to look like, but that does not impact the present growers. So the people that are growing under the first condition here would not be part of the acreage OSU needs to contract with to do the study. And it throws in the caveat that if we don't fully fund the OSU study, and I think that's in the present bill anyway, if we don't fund the OSU study, I want to make it real clear that we go to the Department of Agriculture's policy. If we don't fulfill our side of the research part, then the growers revert to the Department of Agriculture. And that the research report is due in 2016. We had 2014 in the bill. You can't do a field study and get the report back in 2014. That's a logistics problem because we probably have to do 2 years of field growing for Oregon State, and we don't have their research proposal yet, but I worked on a lot of these field studies. I doubt if a one-year field study would have any consequence. So this is an ask of Ways and Means in discussion with Representative Buckley. The bill you're voting on is the bill before us with the attached amendment. But for clarity purposes, I don't want to leave the committee with the impression that we're voting on a bill and I'm doing end run. I think we need more work on this bill down the line. I hope we can get it. Representative Buckley has assured us, Representative Esquivel and myself, that he would do it. But you know the situation as well as I do. It's not in writing.
Okay.
That's the direction.
Thank you very much, Representative Thompson. And again, could you please explain what this proposal would do in terms of the moratorium?
There would be no moratorium at present. Now, remember, no one's growing it this year. because we have a moratorium. So that would end the moratorium and allow the people who were growing it to grow it. And that's relatively small acreage, but it keeps the industry alive during this period of the study. And I don't know, maybe nobody wants to grow it right now under these conditions. It'd be a kind of a risk. But anyway, it allows them then to grow the maximum amount, let's see, how do I, of the last 6 years, several of which were under moratorium, so nothing was grown. It allows them to grow the amount they grew in the largest production of the last 6 years, which would have been during that research phase where we were producing canola and delivering the product. So it just takes us back to pre-moratorium that's in effect right now. And that was not huge acreage because that was all being done under experimental agreements with the Department of Agriculture. So it would allow that experimental period to continue and refine the science on the small, it's relatively small scale.
Thank you very much for that clarification. That's helpful. I've got Vice Chair Esquivel and then Representative Klim.
Yes, and I echo what Representative Klim said. I hate to be in a position of where we are, in fact, dabbling with what the Department of Ag is doing. Unfortunately, we have people on both sides that have put us in this position. That's why we get paid the big bucks, I guess. But more importantly, this is the only way that this was palatable to get this bill moving out of this committee, was to do what we had to do yesterday afternoon. And so that's the reason we're here today in this particular position.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Esquivel. Representative Klim, please.
Mr. Chair, I think probably I should reserve these comments for next, because really we're in a motion on the dash sevens, and yet we're debating conceptual amendments, which I think is not thrilled about it, but I think it's helpful actually to do that. But I probably should do that on the bill after we at least adopt the dash sevens.
All right, thank you very much. I would like to call up Representative Gelser to get her her read on where we're at this point.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Thanks for hearing the bill today and calling me back up. I have not seen the piece of paper, but I was part of these conversations yesterday. I believe that the intention of the proponents of the bill has never been to take canola growing opportunities away from those that are currently growing. It also is not the intention to not have the OSU test plots. So certainly this seems like a reasonable compromise. The interest is in having a moratorium on the expansion of canola while we wait for that peer-reviewed study. So I believe it's a reasonable compromise, and we'll be supporting the advocacy of Representative Thompson with Representative Buckley, and had a brief conversation with Representative Buckley myself yesterday as well.
Thank you very much. And for the record, we just heard from Representative Gelser. Representative Thompson.
I appreciate your support, but I want to reiterate again, this is not an amendment. This is a discussion to go into another committee. So yes. I don't want this committee to think I'm out there doing an end run on them. I'm trying to bring this to a point where we can clarify some of the issues that are still on the table. And you'll not be voting on this as an amendment. So.
Thank you very much, Representative Thompson.
And Mr. Chair, just kind of along those lines, I recognize that and just wanted to make clear and offer my support for that I would share in supporting that additional amendment when we get to Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. Anything further for Representative Gelser? Thank you very much. And we have the necessary paperwork at this point to adopt the dash 7 amendments. Is there any further discussion on the dash 7s? Seeing none, I'm going to recognize Vice Chair McEwen.
We have a motion on the floor.
We need to vote.
I believe we have them.
I'm sorry. We have the motion on the floor. I'm very, very sorry.
We love canola.
Is there any objection to the adoption of the dash 7 amendments to House Bill 2427? With that, I'm going to ask Maria, please, to call the roll on this.
Representative Reardon.
I'll speak to the bill.
Oh, aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Clem.
No.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Whitsitt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Espo.
Aye.
Vice Chairman Chandler.
Aye.
Aye. With having garnered the majority, the dash 7 amendments are adopted. And I am going to recognize again, please, Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Witt, I move House Bill 2427 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves to adopt, moves House Bill 2427 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion on her motion, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I want to do two things, if I can. One, make a statement. Two, then ask the Farm Bureau and Mr. Endicott to come and speak to these conceptual amendments. So first, I want to make it clear that I'm very conflicted on the issue of whether canola should be in the valley or not, and I have been for a long time. What I'm not conflicted on is that when I gave my word to the folks who want to grow canola, that if they got the Department of Ag to change their minds, I would not interfere legislatively with that, and they did it, and I cannot move from that. This 4 years of hearings, studies, I have done more work on this issue than anyone in this building, and so I can't change my position on that. Everyone else has their right to look at it freshly, but I promise these people, if they could change the Department of Ag's mind, I would not have the legislature end run it. So that's but I am conflicted on the issue of canola and the Japanese customer that was here. I am very torn on that. But I would like to ask we get on these conceptual amendments, which is, again, as I said earlier on that other bill, unless I see exact language everyone's agreed to, I don't like voting for these things. I would like to get their input because I don't think there are any growers. So I don't think the moratorium applies. If there are, it's, you know, in the last 6 years, it's the OSU test acres. But this is in addition to acres required by OSU, which I don't think there were any required by OSU. There were acres coming up as part of the study.
Their research study is separate from the acres that farmers are now would now be growing.
So I think there are a few actually in the last 6 years, maybe 400 to 500 acres max and a few growers, but I'd like to know that.
Okay.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau. I'll just start out clarifying. I would say Farm Bureau agrees with Representative Clem that Department of Ag had a job to do. They took the time to do the research and bring all parties together and came back with a proposal that we believe is the best place for this system to be resolved. However, as you look at a potential research project, which Farm Bureau is supportive of, and look at imposing a potential moratorium on canola in the Willamette Valley, which we would have some concerns with, setting that up in 2005, I think you're all aware, was the previous study was funded. Those growing years started in 2006 and I believe 2007, but then the funding was not continued by the legislature, so the growing ceased and stopped. So you have 2 years, I believe, but I would clarify that with the Department of Agriculture from 2007 and 2008 of growing. In that time, there was a handful of growers, maybe over five, less than 10, but I think in the five range, that had smaller fields of about 20 acres to 40 or 50 acres, very small fields. And I know in discussions with Oregon State and with Department of Agriculture, they would like the studies to be done on larger fields for a multitude of reasons. One, to see when you have a bigger mass, what type of reactions you get in terms of pest and disease issues and also regeneration of the seeds the next year in the seed bank. The other issue is I think Department of Ag and OSU also believe that bigger fields and If you have an acreage cap, larger fields reduce your issues around cross-contamination because if you have a total acreage, you have less smaller fields kind of scattered around. So I know they are very interested in larger parcels in the research. So that would be one item in looking at the moratorium. Also, I think you also have a different segment of growers. So if you had six growers participate in the research trials previously, those six growers may not want to participate again. And so being able to allow other growers that have the resources and the interest in partnering with the agency and the department is very important on moving something forward. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions or let Thomas speak.
Mr. Chair and Representative of the Committee, for the record, my name is Thomas Indigot. I'm Vice President of Willamette Biomass Processors, an oilseed processor in Rickrell, also a board member of the Willamette Valley Oilseed Producers Association, and I've been involved in the Canola Advisory Committee through ODA since 2005. Just want to acknowledge that prior to 2005, there was no regulation on canola per se in the valley. The regulation was for the production of edible canola, not industrial rapeseed. That was the purpose of the original 1989, I believe, legislation. I've seen the Dash 6 amendments to this bill. I think they're fairly similar to the Dash 7. I will echo what Katie said. The acreage in 07 and 08 were 40 to 50 acre plots, and there were maybe four or five of them. I also, by email, asked you all to have a look at North Valley Farms testimony, Mike Vandehei in Banks, who's been growing this crop 150 to 300 acres each year for the last 3 years. I also want to acknowledge that our members of our association did not bring any bills to the legislature. We're here dealing with the one that was brought by other growers. In terms of the study, I think it is an interesting idea. I think there are a lot of details that need to be spelled out. I know that the language was added to the Dash 6s. I assume it's in the Dash 7s to not only look at the impact of canola, but also forage turnip, which is genetically identical to canola, and also tillage radish. Both of those crops have had a major explosion in acreage in the last 2 years, upwards of potentially 20,000 acres. I also know that the economic study listed in the Dash 6s was looking at the negative impact of canola on the specialty seed industry, but also the positive impact of canola on the grass seed and wheat industries. And as we've talked about throughout this process, this is really an opportunity for non-irrigated growers on the edge of the valley, which is those areas that ODA has designated as canola production areas, and that's been the discussion over the last 7 years or so. We absolutely don't support a moratorium. I think the idea of a study is a good one, and I think at the end of the day we're going to find that given the management practices prescribed by the ODA administrative rule, canola absolutely can coexist in the valley at a certain acreage, and I think we'd all like to find out what that number is. But in the meantime, I firmly believe this is more or less another stall tactic from this specialty seed industry as we've gone through over the last several years. So we don't support a moratorium. I could see the positive aspects of a study, and I'll leave it at that. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Representative Klum, is that...
That's helpful.
Yeah. Okay. With that, thank you both very, very much. Committee members, just to remind us where we are in the process at this point, we have adopted the Dash 7 amendments. We have a motion on the floor for a referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there further discussion on this motion? I'm not seeing any.
Mr. Chair, sorry, just one. Is it with recommendation?
Yes, it is.
I can't support that if it were no recommendation, maybe, since this isn't even the bill that we were promising we're sending there. But as I said earlier, the promise of language later, unless I see it and everyone's agreed to it, I don't mind continuing the conversation, but I just can't support a with recommendation when we don't know what the language is. But thank you for hearing me out.
Understood, Representative Klum. And with that, is there anything further? Vice Chair Esquivel?
Yes, and we've outlined pretty much what we would like to have done in Ways and Means, and if that isn't completed, then we, of course, we will have a different discussion. We'll have different votes.
Okay, very good. Last and final call for any discussion among the committee. Seeing none, Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative Reardon.
I'm learning to understand that the legislature works in strange and mysterious ways. So I will vote yes with reservations and right to change on the floor.
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Representative
Clem. No.
Representative
Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Andre.
Aye.
Representative Whitzick.
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Vice Chair McKeelan.
Aye.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2427. Thank you very much, committee members. And just give me a second here to shuffle some paperwork.
3408, I got something that makes me happy at least.
Okay, I am going to reopen the work session on House Bill 3358. We have the necessary paperwork on this bill at this time. And Beth, can you remind us where we're at in the process on this one?
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is the bill on the Deschutes Groundwater Mitigation Grant funding that you just heard about, the Dash 1 Amendment. We just received a fiscal statement just for the purpose of transmitting the bill to Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to recognize Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Witt, clarification. We're still on the adoption of the Dash 1 Amendment. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Chair Witt, I move to adopt the Dash 1 Amendments dated April 17, 2013.
Vice Chair McEwen moves to adopt the Dash 1 Amendments dated April 17, 2013 to House Bill 3358. Is there discussion on her motion? I'm not seeing any. Is there objections to her motion? Seeing none, so ordered. Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Witt, I move House Bill 3358 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves House Bill 3358 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion on this motion? Yes, Representative Whitsett.
I am going to vote no because I'm concerned about Water Watch wanting to change the bill and their objection to the amendment. But I reserve the right to vote yes on the floor.
All right, very good. Thank you very much. Is there further discussion on the motion?
Dicey, isn't it?
Representative Clem.
Sorry. This is the, make sure I got this right, this is the one we talked about that's sort of the backup to the Senate bill?
That's correct.
But we don't know what the language is again. I think I'm going to vote no. If it were, again, with no recommendation, yes, but since we're recommending due pass on a bill that we don't know the language, I'm not going to support that and hope the Senate bill works out, or if this passes, that people don't assume the due pass means pass it right as is.
Okay. Understood. Representative Unger?
We're doing due pass on this one. This one seems particularly up in the air.
I don't pay much attention.
If someone would like to move to withdraw the motion, we can restate it. There is a motion to withdraw the present motion. With that, let's see here. We're going to need a formal vote on this one, I think. So, again, colleagues, we are withdrawing the motion, presumably to end up with a motion that does not have a recommendation.
Okay.
To remove the due pass. Understood?
There's no recommendation.
Yeah. Okay. Do we need to vote to withdraw a motion, or can she just do it?
Chair Witt.
Yes.
I will rescind my prior motion.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen has rescinded her motion. I will recognize her if she'd like to make another one.
Thank you, Chair Witt. I move House Bill 3358 as amended to the floor and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves House Bill 3358 as amended to the floor.
Without recommendation,
and that bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion on this motion? I'm not seeing any. Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative Whitford.
No.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquel.
Aye.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. Thank you very much, committee members. Let's see, with that, I'm going to move to House Bill 3452. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3452. Beth?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3452 is the bill that addresses the circumstances under which a gray wolf may be taken. There's a dash one amendment in front of you. There are some representatives in the audience that I believe can speak to the dash one if you would like.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, who do we have that... Rep Jensen here.
And we didn't even recommend it. So now it's just.
We can stand at ease for a moment.
We doing wolf pieces.
Yeah. record. Thank you, everyone, for your patience. Just as a way of, there may be some folks in the room for some of the bills, and House Bill 2745, that's nuisance properties with animals. This bill is going to need some more work in another session. House Bill 3408, forfeited animals. The same is true for that bill. And lastly, House Bill 3437, the Fish and Wildlife Commission. We're going to make that number one on the list of items that we will be working in the interim. And with that, I am going to...
Which one is with the...
Okay.
Thank you. Okay.
Everybody okay?
3437. Right.
Okay. That's correct.
Thank you.
And with that, I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 3452, Wolves. And I'm going to ask up, please, Ron Anglin.
Greg Melcher's with him.
Looks like he's brought out the big guns. Welcome, Kurt. Welcome to both of you. Go ahead. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Ron Anglin is here with me as well, and I know Representative Jensen had a meeting that overlapped at this time frame, so I'm not sure if he's going to join us or not. But Ron has been working with Representative Jensen on the Dash 1 amendments, and we're here and happy to answer any questions that you may have, or Ron could walk through the actual amendment with you, whatever is the Chair's preference.
Thank you very much. Ron, if you would be willing to guide us through that Dash 1, I'd be most appreciative.
Certainly. Good morning, Chair Witt and members of the committee. For the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. Basically, the Dash 1 amendment creates three sections to the original wolf language that you saw before you. Previous version of the bill, the original version of the bill, it inserts language that makes it very clear that the department in subsection 3, the department has authority to take wolves. And then once you move into subsection 4, it gets at some of the intent from the landowner community that would allow for permitless take of wolves. When they're both attacking and certain conditions chasing livestock, and as implemented by rule through the wolf management plan. So it tries to focus on the provisions that were in the wolf plan and give landowners more flexibility to deal with the problems as they arise. So that's a real high level touch on it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Questions from either one of our witnesses, Representative Krieger.
Maybe, Ron, not so specific to the amendment and this overall, but maybe more general. If you don't feel comfortable, say so, you can get back to me. But we saw in Yellowstone where the wolves got in there and went from 21,000 elk down to 4,500. And I'm concerned whether or not our existing plan gives you the options and authority without a judge, somebody in a black robe making wildlife decisions they know nothing about for the most part, to keep from having our wildlife herds in Northeast Oregon decimated before we finally recognize what's happening and then try to build them back.
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, I think that as long as we're allowed to move forward with implementation of the wolf plan, there are provisions within the wolf plan that allow for addressing those types of situations. And certainly once wolves were delisted in Idaho and Montana and they were able to move forward with management of wolves, they've started addressing concerns in some of those areas once it's back under state authority and able to manage the population. So we feel the wolf plan as originally adopted laid out the prescriptions to do that, and once we can get to the point where wolves are delisted, within the Oregon ESA and can move into the management authority of the plan that we can address those types of situations.
Okay, thank you.
Anything further? Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I had the opportunity to be in McCall, Idaho for National Sportsman's Caucus, and we had quite a lengthy discussion on wolves, and I think Idaho understands those wolves pretty well since they've had them for, and they have a substantial number. I believe it was in the Chamberlain Basin where they introduced a pack of wolves. I think it was the Chamberlain Basin. The head of elk population was about 900. And once the wolf population went past 24, they noted a depletion of the elk population to the point of where it got up to 38, I think it was, 36, 38 wolves in the pack. And the elk population went down to 300 from 900. So they harvested and took all but about 20 wolves. And within a three-year period, they were back to 900. It's a very interesting balance that the Game Commission has to play at that point. But it does, it will have an effect. Of course, the other effect is nature's going to let the wolves starve because eventually there wouldn't be enough animals to feed them. So it's a very interesting balance that you're challenged with.
Yes, it is.
And Mr. Chair, I would just add to Mr. Anglin's comments that we're fortunate, at least now in Oregon, in that in eastern Oregon, these wolves are now federally delisted. Mm-hmm. And so once we achieve our state objective, which is four breeding pairs for three consecutive years, we will be able to take them off the state list and then have full management authority, which was not the case in Idaho or Montana. They were dealing with federally listed populations for a much longer period of time.
Thank you very much. Anything further? Representative Whitson, please.
This only apply to those wolves east of Highway 395, basically.
Go ahead, Ron.
Chair Witt, Representative Whitsitt. Yes, the state portion of the plan and the federal delisting is only for those portions of the state east of 395.
Additional questions or comments? Vice Chair Esquivel.
I believe that means OR7's out of the zone, right?
Yeah.
Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, that's correct. That's in the federally listed portion of the state.
That's in my county.
Anything additional?
Yes, Representative Reardon.
Could you summarize just once again very briefly what you can do under the Wolf Plan today?
Chair Witt, Representative Reardon. So the Wolf Plan lays out a prescription that while they're still on the state list, the actions that we can take as an agency in working with landowners to address damage as one perspective in just dealing with the landowner aspect of this. And as wolves reach certain population targets within the plan, we can move towards a delisting. And as you end up with more wolves, the plan is designed to become more and more flexible in dealing with wolves and addressing wolf depredation problems after it's delisted. So it's designed in a way to provide more and more flexibility to the landowner. And as the wolf population grows and you hit those population targets that are outlined within the plan, it also gives the department more and more flexibility to manage wolves in a way that is more from an ecosystem standpoint and looking at wolves in relation to their prey base and their habitat base, etc. All designed to ensure that we don't slide backwards and end up with another state listing, which we would not want to see.
And Mr. Chair, I would just add to
Please.
That. And so under the Wolf Plan, Chair Witt, members of the committee, Representative Reardon, under the Wolf Plan, when we are in a situation of chronic depredation, that is a situation where a pack is chronically killing livestock in a given area, the plan directs us or gives us the authority to lethally remove wolves from the pack or even up to the whole pack, which is a common practice in wolf management. That particular aspect of the Wolf Plan has been challenged, and we're now the subject of a stay for the last year and a half, a court-ordered stay, which prohibits us from taking that lethal removal, that final lethal removal step. So I just want to clarify, and there is a section in this bill language that clarifies statutorily that the commission and the department has that authority.
Yes, please.
Normally, your department issues hunting and fishing licenses, is that correct?
Chair Witt, Representative Reardon, that's correct.
Follow-up.
Yes.
So under this language, it looks to me like says a person who is a landowner or a local occupant of land may authorize another person to enter the land and so forth and so on. Is that a lot like giving them a hunting license, or?
Chair Witt, Representative Reardon, what this is paralleling is, while it's true that we issue licenses for hunting, fishing, those activities, landowners have authority under the damage statutes to take wildlife that are causing damage. Mm-hmm. And specifically, they currently have authority to take, for instance, bears and cougars that are causing damage without first getting a permit from us. Right. This essentially puts wolves in that same category, that they can take that action without first getting a permit from us.
And that part I get, but it's the giving the license or the authority to someone else beyond the landowner is that standard procedure, or is this a new?
Go ahead, Ron. Some
people are. So, Chair Witt, Representative Reardon, yes, that is standard procedure. You know, a lot of times it's referred to as a landowner agent, and they may contract with somebody else to do work on their property to deal with the damage problem, somebody that has expertise. This gives them clear authority to do that in statute, and is mirrored on the other portions of the 498.012 statute that you find in Section 3 that give that same authority under damage situations. So it's only when they're in a damage situation they have the authority to do that.
Right. Are you in support of this amendment?
Well, I'm sorry.
Are you in support of this amendment?
Well, Chair Witt, Representative Reardon, we have, as you're probably aware, over on the Senate side, we have Senate Bill 197, which was submitted by Governor Kitzhaber on our behalf. Some aspects of this bill and this amendment are consistent with our Senate Bill 197. Certainly, the department has always had an interest in securing the affirmation that we have the authority to manage wolves consistent with our wolf plan. There's also language here that's a little broader than our original Senate Bill 197. We're officially neutral, and we've been working with the bill proponents and others on this language, and expect it'll probably be further worked on the Senate side as individuals' issues are addressed.
And just to clarify, there will be, I'm presuming, a motion soon before we close the work session today to move this bill to rules. I have a late-breaking note from Senator Jensen, who has been working diligently in the background here. And he and the Speaker have agreed to have a couple of additional tweaks in the Rules Committee, with the agreement that this bill will be coming out of Rules at the earliest opportunity. So there actually will more than likely be a couple of tweaks on the House side before it gets over to the Senate. Just for the committee members' information. Representative Reardon, additional questions?
No, I'll probably be a no, but
okay. Very good. Anyone else? Questions for the department?
No.
I'm not seeing any gentlemen. Thank you very, very much. Committee members, are we ready to work the -1 amendments?
Sure.
Yep. Okay. With that, I'm going to recognize Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Witt, I move to adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 3452, dated April 17th, 2013.
Vice Chair McEwen moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3452, dated April 17th, 2013. Discussion on this motion. I'm not seeing any. Is there objection to the motion? Again, none. So ordered. Thank you very much, Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Whitt, I move House Bill 3452 as amended. And that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Okay. Vice Chair McEwen moves House Bill 3452 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Thank you.
Discussion on this motion. I'm not seeing any. Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
No.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative
Wood. Aye.
Vice Chair
Askew. Aye.
Vice Chair
McEwen.
Aye.
Chair Wood. Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes, and the bill, as amended, is sent to the Committee on Rules. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3452. And for the good of the order, first of all, I would like to recognize the efforts of Representative Thompson yesterday and this morning to make it possible that we have an amendment to the, or conceptually we have amendments to the canola bill that made it possible for us to get critical mass on that issue. Representative Thompson, thank you very, very much.
Okay. I think it's called in progress.
I want to thank our committee members for all of the hard work that you've done on our House bills. We have just completed our agenda of House bills, and we'll be moving to hearing Senate bills here next week. And with that, is there anything else for the good of the order? I particularly also want to thank you, too. We've had two evening hearings so far in this session, and your efforts at making that possible are also greatly appreciated. With that, our committee stands adjourned. Thank you very much, committee members.